That don't make no sense. Like, CISSP is not an entry level certification. Secondly, the Google IT support professional is a trash cert. You should never get that. You don't even need that or A+ to even get a tech role. They are like bottom of the barrel. Really, first of all, hang on real quick. The Google IT support professional certification is not something that's even a Google actual cert. If you go on Coursera's site, it'll say this cert is not has any affiliation with Google. What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Textual Talk. I'm your host, Ace D, man. And look, this is number two. This is the second episode I'm doing in a week. I might try to get to two episodes a week. It's going to be really tough, but y'all let me know. Today, we just got a little bit of things to talk about. Bad TikTok cybersecurity advice, the Uber breach, security awareness, and some interview prep, you know, nothing major. But if you're listening right now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, go ahead and follow the podcast for the kid, please. It helps us out. And if you're watching on YouTube right now, go ahead and hit that like button. Give us a thumbs up, share it out for the YouTube algorithm. Now, for those of you not aware, like I had a TikTok reel, shorts, and I'm pretty much telling people, hey, before you take these people's cybersecurity advice, make sure they are who they say they are. I came across a creator. He stitched up. They have these salary people that go around, ask people what they make and what they do, what industry they're in. And in this video, the person said they were in cybersecurity. I think they were saying they made like $150,000. But that's not what this video is about. He stitched the video talking about, hey, you know, cybersecurity is a hot field. You should get into it. Here are three certs that you can use to get into it. And he said, CISSP, Google IT Support Professional, Microsoft Fundamentals, and AWS Cloud Practitioner. That don't make no sense. Like, CISSP is not an entry-level certification. Secondly, the Google IT Support Professional is a trash cert. You should never get that. You don't even need that or A+ to even get a tech role. They are like bottom of the barrel. Really, first of all, hang on real quick. The Google IT Support Professional certification is not something that's even a Google actual cert. If you go on Coursera's site, it'll say this cert is not has any affiliation with Google. That cert is not on anywhere on one of Google sites. So first of all, that's an irrelevant cert. Microsoft Fundamentals, that's an irrelevant cert. Yes, it's vendor, you know, straight to a vendor. But no, I mean, if you're going to get something Microsoft related, this isn't the old days. We're trying to do help desk. If you were going to start off with a Microsoft cert, get your Azure 900, where you're just getting the basics of you learning about Azure, their cloud infrastructure. And then he also said AWS Cloud Practitioner. Now, I actually do agree with getting that as an entry level cert because it's cheap and it tells you everything about all the different services that's involved with AWS. But my biggest problem with all of this is the fact that what a lot of these creators do, they'll make searches and not searches. What these creators do is they make content based on what's being searched and not really caring about the integrity of what they're putting out. So I can literally go like, dude, what's the top 10 certifications in cybersecurity? And then make a video on it with no context and put it out. And people are going to watch it. But that doesn't help anybody. I'm about helping people. I like to be funny, entertain y'all. But for the most part, I want to help people. So check this out. I'm about to read off a list of the top 10 certifications and we're going to see what comes up. So ironically enough, I found a link from Coursera with their top 10 certifications. And number one is the CISSP. But I'm going to read a little bit about this. The other sites I'm not going to read much about. But I want to let you guys know that this is not an entry-level cert. And this link is actually probably going to back that up for me. The CISSP certification from the cybersecurity professional organization, ISC Squared, ranks among the most sought-after credentials in the industry. Earning your CISSP demonstrates that you're experienced in IT security and capable of designing, implementing, and monitoring a cybersecurity program. This advanced certification is for experienced security professionals looking to advance their careers in roles like CISO, security administrator, IT security engineer, senior security consultant, information assurance analyst. Requirements. To qualify to take the CISSP exam, you'll need 5 or more years of cumulative work experience in at least 2 of the 8 cybersecurity domains. These include security and risk management, asset security, security architecture and engineering, communication and network security, identity and access management, security assessment and testing, security operations, and software development security. A 4-year degree can substitute for 1 year. The cost of this cert is $749. So like I told y'all, it's not entry-level cert. So anybody starting any list off with telling you to get a CISSP, disregard everything they say. Because for one, a CISSP is not going to necessarily guarantee you get a job, a cybersecurity job anyway. To be honest, I've seen people get a CISSP and still have trouble finding jobs. CISSP is meant to, any certification is meant to enhance the skill set that you already currently possess. But I'm going to get to the rest of the list. 2 is the CISA. So that stands for Certified Information Systems Auditor. This is a good one, especially if you have auditing experience like from banking and the finance and you're trying to pivot over into cybersecurity. That could be a beneficial one to you because you already have the experience when it comes to auditing, but you're just trying to tie it over and use your transferable skills of cybersecurity. So I agree with that one. The next one is the Certified Information Security Manager. It's like right up there with a CISSP, but a little bit different. It doesn't have a name recognition, but it's a good cert. CompTIA Security Plus. Now, this actually should be number 1 off of the strength that is foundational, and then it can show you many different domains that you probably want to actually focus in for your cybersecurity career. And the cost of that test now is $370. Sheesh. That thing used to be about right at $300. And you got the Certified Ethical Hacker, which is Garbo. The GSEC, which is a good cert. Cost of that is $2,500. You got the System Security Certified Practitioner, SSCP. That's $250, so that's not a bad cert. You got the CompTIA CASP, pretty much $500. Then you got the Certified Incident Handler, DCIH. That's a good one. You'll see that a lot of incident response type of job postings. That's $2,500. And then you got the OSCP, Offensive Security Certified Professional. And this test is $1,000. But all in all, like I said, I could pull that list up and I could put that list on TikTok and talk about it just like I just did now. And, you know, people will flock to it, right? But on here, I didn't read out the amount of money that it says you can make. I'll put the link in the description so you can read it for yourself, because, of course, that's the first thing that catches everybody. But really not knowing what goes into it. That's the part, you know. I'm all for everybody getting to tech. I'll never gatekeep it. But we do have to be realistic. You got to know what you're doing, man. And this lets me segue into our next segment, Uber. So what the news sources state is that the attacker is about around like 18 years old. And he had the users. Well, the person in question was an external contractor. And I'm assuming that his credentials were on the dark web. And a rule of thumb is every so often what you should do is, well, they have apps too. Like there are different apps. I think I forgot who I used to use. What's it? Symantec? Or Norton, either it was either Symantec or Norton, whoever. But through your job too, sometimes they offer this thing through benefits. It's called LifeLock, where they monitor all your information and where they like go search the dark web and stuff like that, see if your credentials are somewhere out there. You should do that and go to Have I Been Pwned every so often, just to make sure like your credentials are out there. If they are, then just change them. But getting past that. So what happened is that the hacker pretty much logged on to a system. It was successful. And so they used MFA prompts. And so all he kept doing was doing the successful logons and prompting the external contractor until the external contractor finally just wanted it to stop, hit okay. Little did he know that that would lead to that person getting into the network on a VPN. I believe they found a file that had some PowerShell scripts with the hardcoded admin codes in it, which led him to get into their Slack space, get access to their Google workspace, and also get access to some internal documents. So that's the gist of what happened in the incident. But I'm going to read briefly, real quick, about some stuff that they released like a couple of days ago with an update to the incident. So give me a second. Uber blames Lattice hacking group for recent security breach. On Monday, Uber disclosed more details related to the security incident that happened last week, pinning an attack on a threat actor it believes to be affiliated with the notorious Lattice hacking group. This group typically uses similar techniques to target technology companies, and in 2022 alone has breached Microsoft, Cisco, Samsung, NVIDIA, and Okta, among others. The financially motivated extortionist gang was dealt a huge blow in March 2022 when the City of London police moved to arrest seven individuals aged between 16 and 21 for their alleged connection to the group. Two of those juvenile defendants are facing fraud charges. Now, that's crazy. I know for a fact these people didn't go to college for 5 years and have 10 years of experience in their field to hack all these different companies. So, job descriptions, hiring managers, HR, you need to ease back some of the reins of these, you know, expectations that you want these applicants to have. And if that's the case that they're going to have that, then they should get paid accordingly. But let's keep on to the article. The hacker behind the Uber breach, an 18-year-old teenager who goes by the moniker Teapot, has also claimed responsibility for breaking into video game maker Rockstar Games over the weekend. Now, Rockstar, well, the hacker came out and said he didn't access nothing. I think he just was lying, so he was capping. So I'll still just be keeping up with that just to see what's happening to that, because that's pretty interesting because people love GTA. He said he had the, I think he said he had the source codes to GTA 5 and 6. Uber said it's working with several leading digital forensics firms as the company's investigation into the incident continues. In addition to coordinating with the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Justice Department on the matter, asked for how the attack unfolded, the ride-sharing firm said an external contractor had their personal device compromised with malware and their corporate account credentials stolen and sold on the dark web, corroborating an earlier report from Group IB. So I would assume that their device was compromised based through phishing. I feel like that's one of the most simple yet most effective ways that most accounts get compromised and most hosts get infected with malware. It's through phishing. The Singapore headquartered company the previous week noted that at least two of Uber's employees located in Brazil and Indonesia were affected with the raccoon and radar information stealing. That's it right there. And so I was wondering when earlier I said something about the dark web, those information stealers, that's what got them. The attacker then repeatedly tried to log into the contractor's Uber account. The company said each time the contractor received a two-factor login approval request, which initially blocked access. Eventually, however, the contractor accepted when an attacker successfully logged in. Upon gaining the foothold, the miscreant is said to have accessed other employee accounts, thereby equipping the malicious party with elevated permissions to several internal systems, such as Google Workspace and Slack. All right, so I've read all this stuff. I mean, I said it earlier. Let me see if it's anything different. So the alleged team hacker said they have downloaded some unspecified number of internal Slack messages and information from an in-house tool used by his finance team to manage certain invoices. So everybody knows most companies advise you to do security awareness training probably twice a year, sometimes three. It really just depends on the company. The biggest issue I've always found with security awareness is, one, it's quite boring, to be honest. Two, it's the same thing over and over again. So it's not updating with the different attack vectors that's normally happening. And our attention spans are already short enough as it is. So people might not really be paying this thing attention. They might just be clicking through, going to the end, and then doing their look on the test, but then get through it. I would propose that they figure out some type of interactive game that keeps, you know, our attention better so that we can get through it and actually learn when we're doing security awareness. Because for everyone who doesn't think it's important, it's so important. You can have all the tools in the world in your environment, but you're only as strong as your weakest link. And right now, human nature is the weakest link when it comes to cybersecurity attacks. It just never fails. But let's talk about what happened though. With the MFA fatigue, I would like to tell you that just for a security awareness prompt, and I have a story. This happened to me before. I was chilling at the house one day, and I kept on getting prompts from Microsoft about my Outlook account. And I was like, I'm not trying to log in. And then I reached out to my little brothers because we share like Xbox games here. And I think they had one of my old laptops. I said, y'all trying to access some of my account? And they was like, no. And so I logged into my account. And then I looked at the login attempts and I seen like failed login attempts from like all these other places. And so immediately I went and changed my password because I said, okay, somebody has my password, but they can't get in because I already had MFA, you know, on my account. So I would tell you right now, hey, if you're getting unsolicited MFA prompts on your device, do not click it. Do not click OK. Contact. Now that's a little bit different. If it's for work, contact the IT team and then they'll probably get in touch with the security team and they'll go on from there. If it comes down to something that's not work related, call that company that you that the app is whoever it's for and call their customer service, their IT team, and let them know. They may have some breaches going on that they don't know about where companies, customers' data has been exposed, right? So don't do that. If you're getting, you know, we always get some of those prompts sometimes with the code, put the numbers in. Never give anybody those numbers. Also, banks or anything like that aren't going to call you and ask you for your password. This stuff kind of happens a lot. Like they have your credentials and they say, hey, we just sent you a code. You thinking it's the bank. They mask their number as the bank and you believe it. And then they put it in. Now they got your account. That happened to a friend of mine before. I think they were tired from work and they weren't really paying attention. And that's what I said. It preys on human nature. But I would say one of the things I think they could do, one simple solution is, hey, disable the MFA prompts and make them manually go into the authenticator app and put the code in to access systems. That's easier way. Therefore, you have to be the person responsible for doing it and someone else from a remote location can't get you like that. So that's something I thought about. Also, I don't know the frequency of how many failed logins there were, but I know most of our correlation searches are based off of like a threshold or how many times something happens in minutes. So I'm assuming that he might've used a script or something that did this because these things have to be coming back to back very fast. But I believe what they can do is, you know, you can do account lockout. Well, since the credentials were correct, they wasn't going to lock him out, but he had to pass the NFA prompt. They should do something based on the time and the threshold, say, hey, if you get this many prompts in this amount of time that aren't, you know, successful, let's lock his account out. You know, that's not normal for those prompts to be coming that fast. Now, if they just did it a little slower, little by little, because they had time, that's a little bit more trickier to plan for because it could be in and out of the threshold based on what they do it for. Also, if they don't want to do that, they can use a hardware token. Back when I did help desk, we had the actual hardware RSA token. So it had the 6 digits, and I think it changed every like 45 seconds or 60 seconds. And so you had to have that thing. If you lost it, you had to call in to us. And so we could do some things on our end to help you get into whatever system you needed. And that's how the government kind of, you know, eases a lot of things. People can access the things because they do know. They threat modeled for some of the things that we are laxed on when it comes to the private sector. So those are some things that they could do to kind of mitigate the MFA thing. Now, when it comes to the blue side of things, you know, people are probably blaming them, but that's honestly a control mechanism fault. Whoever does IAM, they have to threat model for that type of stuff. That's not the blue team's job. Blue team job is, hey, let's make these rules. Let's respond and let's, you know, notate everything and reach out to the teams that we need to if a breach or incident has occurred. Of course, they want to thwart them when they can. But however, that's different because maybe in their systems they look normal. So some of my questions are, okay, was the logon unusual? Like, did it come from somewhere different from the person logged on? And I don't know what information they had on them. Maybe the VPN fooled them to make it seem like it was that person logging in. What's their title? Do they typically do stuff like that? So back in when I worked in the SOC, I get unusual authentication alerts all the time. And so that, you know, would get me to look into, okay, hey, have they logged in from this location before? What have they been doing for the last week, the last 30 days? Are they traveling? Do I see them trying to do a lateral movement in a network? All these things I'm compiling before I make a decision if I think it's an actual incident or not. Most of the times it was false positive. But you got to go through those steps and have a method on how you look at authentication alerts so you don't miss anything. Because it's easy just to see it all. And also, this is what is very important. When it comes to working in the SOC and it comes to using, that's why they use so much automation and SIEM tools now. It's so many logs coming in, analysts can't keep up. But it's very important for the SIEM to be tuned. So if you're getting that many authentication alerts and they're always getting closed out, it's actually an issue that, hey, this thing isn't as effective as it needs to be. This thing should be firing a little bit more on actual incidents that we possibly can prevent and not actual false positives. Because that's how you miss stuff. It happens all the time. Classic case. So I would want to know what happened on that side of it. Did they get any alerts or did it look normal to them? I know they're probably still busy doing, you know, all these different forensics and write-ups. It's probably been like a super busy day. Like Uber posted so many different job openings on LinkedIn. Well, LinkedIn scraped them and put it on their platform. But I mean, hey, if you're a security engineer and you need a job and you want to get paid good, Uber can use you. But that's the thing also, though, when it comes to working in security, some companies don't want to pay until they need to. When it could have been avoided if you just gave them the budget they needed in the beginning to implement certain controls and hire certain people, it'd be okay. But this happens to all companies, big and small. Now, the scary part is that this happens far often to probably companies you never heard of. And they don't have the resources to work with some of these third party vendors to come in and do forensics. So it's even worse on them. But also the reason why security is important is say, okay, not only if you potentially lose out on some data or customer data, so you got to pay them possibly, but your reputation is damaged. People might be a little, you know, hesitant on doing Uber things. Now it's like, they just got breached. Maybe I'm going to use Lyft. All this stuff affects everything. Your perception is everything in the public. So that's kind of what I think about that. Blue Team has a hard, I know they've been working hard. So shout out to all y'all, man. Hope y'all finally get some sleep. But let me see what else is on my notes. All right. So real quick, I want to give you guys some interview tips. And these will help you if you are a person like me, you don't really think very linear. And sometimes you like think your thoughts are scatterbrained. And so it's hard for you to pretty much put out something in a consistent flow to where maybe the interviewer doesn't understand it, right? All right, so the first one is, if you're given a scenario question, take out a notebook. Like I got a notebook right here, stay on deck. Notebook or whiteboard. I got like a little whiteboard right behind me. To get your process together. So ask clarifying questions, get everything you need to, write it down. And so you can talk it through and come up, you know, with a solution. Therefore, they can see, hey, this person came prepared to this interview. They are, you know, being detail oriented. Like, here, free game. So I hate when people, not hate, but like a lot of people have soft skills and stuff on a resume. That's fine, but don't necessarily be there. They take up space. So if I want to show I'm detail oriented, I show it in an interview with something they do. Just like if I'm being detail oriented, getting all these clarifying questions. Now they know I'm detail oriented. I don't have to say it on my resume. I show them I'm detail oriented. Do that, and then you probably be fair better with your answer. And even if it's not the right answer, they could possibly see what type of person you are on how you approach solving problems. The next one is you should research the company before you interview with them. Check out the latest news surrounding the company, new products, services, etc. That way you can bring it up in the interview. And that shows passion. That shows you actually want to work with the company. It's kind of like those small things like that help you stick out over other applicants because you took the time to do your homework and actually talk about some stuff. So you kind of understand the mission and the strategies and all the goals that the company has set. Also, like I talked about in the beginning of the podcast, stay current with current tech news. Some of these attacks have actually helped me answer scenario questions I've been asked in a couple of interviews before. So free game, if you're doing like, especially like Blue Team type of stuff and you're asked about how you respond to some of these accidents or incidents, as you call them, read up on them and study up what they found, you know, when they did the lessons learned. Then you can refer back to those when you ask a certain scenario question and you'll knock it out the park. Trust me. And this is repetitive, but it says interviewers typically ask, how do you stay current with tech news? you know, get you a couple of RSS feeds where they can just email you. Or like for me, I have a Slack space and I have a security news channel that I stay up to date with, like all different type of cybersecurity facts, like, or different news that's coming out like every hour, every minute. It'll let me know. Also, I say, if this is a role that's a step up role for you, make sure you ask some self-awareness question. Like example, how does my background compare versus the rest of applicants? That's a good one. But you want to know where you stack up. And they may tell you, oh, you don't have the experience of this person, that person, or whatever. And it's kind of like, you know, you can reassure them that, you know, that won't be an issue. You showed in your career that you didn't always have the experience, but you succeeded somehow. And then this last one. Is there anything about my experience that has you hesitant to move me forward in this process? This is about the same thing as the last one. However, they might even specify something in the role that you don't have necessarily experience with, but you could pretty much tell them, hey, you know, it's going to be okay. I actually do have this experience. I did this before, or I know how to do this, or I'm familiar with doing blah, blah, blah. And that was pretty much it on my interview tips. I'm going to try to do interview tips or career advice all throughout these podcasts, one of the solo ones, just to give a little bit more value to help you out, especially if you're out there interviewing. And with that also being said, for the people who are wanting to be SOC analysts on a blue team, I actually have some scenario questions that I came up with. I've been posting them on my LinkedIn and my Twitter, but I also will put them in the description of this video. And so the reason behind this is I've had countless consultations and calls with people who pass like Security Plus and audit, some of these other different certifications. But when it came to doing these scenario questions, they didn't do so hot. And I'm going to just tell you honestly, it's because the certs don't prepare you for that. And honestly, you wouldn't really know what to do until you had to do it. And it's kind of one of those reasons why, like, sometimes there aren't really entry-level roles in cybersecurity unless a company just really likes you and just wants to, you know, bet it all on you. It's because they expect you to know a lot. And so with these scenario questions, you'll get a feel of how to think as a SOC analyst, because that's what a lot of people struggle with. It's like the thinking part of like actually being an analyst, like, you know, how to do, what to do, my methodology, my process, you know, what does this alert even do? You know, having to figure out, like, I've asked people sometimes, hey, what if a new alert fired, but there's no, you know, documentation on it? What would you do to solve it? That's, you know, a simple question. It's not me trying to trick you up. It's really, I want to know what you would do. So, like I said, click the link in the description for that. And then, hey, we get into the end, man. We rolling, man. This episode 57, man, we came a long way, man. So I really appreciate y'all for rocking me, all the Patreon members. I got something for y'all. I've been really, like, look, I've been super busy, man. I've been doing so many resumes and resume reviews. It's ridiculous, but, you know, that's all it is, man, to help people. One day I'm going to staff up. That way I could be hands off. But I appreciate y'all for rocking with me. Until next time, it's your boy HD. Like I say, let's stay textual.